thank you very much. This is Saturday with Claire Byrne, and you're very welcome to get in touch with us over the course of the next hour. Text us on 51551, email saturday at rte.ie, and on Twitter the address is at Saturday RTE. Joining us today, we have Fine Gael MEP Brian Hayes, Billy Kelleher, Fianna Fáil TD and health spokesperson, from our Athlone studio, Ronan Mullen, independent senator, Dermot MacDonald, Irish Independent Group business editor, and Harry McGee, Irish Times political correspondent. You're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. We're going to start with the National Maternity Hospital. Brian Hayes, there is a theory abound the last couple of days. Derval's been writing and talking about it, John McManus in the Irish Times, that this is all about money. It's not about culture. It's not about ethos. It's about cash. What do you think?
Well, I read what John McManus said yesterday in the Irish Times and indeed what's in the Irish Independent today. And I suppose in the two fundamental questions, why the religious order didn't simply gift the land to the state or sell the land to the state, it now seems clear that the land is collateral for a broader range of borrowings that the St Vincent's Group have. So it's not possible.
Over.
And I suppose the question that would follow that is, why didn't we know about this earlier in the week? Because
Dervla
said it in her article, but unfortunately RTÉ didn't cover Dervla's article until now, Claire.
Shame
on RTÉ for that. But this is a fundamental question. So that has been answered. I suppose the other question people will then ask is, in a circumstance where the new hospital is built, and we need the new hospital built, and I fundamentally agree with that, why is it necessary that four of the nine members of the board would be nominated from the St Vincent's side? And I think in all of this, we should have had this information out earlier. When the heads of the agreement first came out, I think the logical thing to do is that we should have had that.
Because this issue, this dispute over the ownership and the issues, was well flagged in the public domain. There was quite a controversy about it. But if you tiptoe, Claire, back into the history of this, the state found out by accident in 2010 that the St Vincent Hospital Group had used the publicly funded hospital as collateral for loans to build its car park and private hospital facility. The state had to take certain moves at that point because Bank of Ireland and Ulster Bank had a claim over the lands in the event that St Vincent's Hospital Group defaulted or that it was sold. And it had to go in and backtrack and secure arrangements. They had to go in and negotiate a side deal with both banks that in the event of the group coming for sale, that they would have first dibs at full market value. And since then, there have been other legal moves to protect the state interests, its capital expenditure in the site. And I think the most important intervention in this row has been the move by Kieran Mulvey this morning to come out and say, look, it's tied up in financial and legal arguments. The St Vincent's Hospital Group have other loans, they have other considerations, there's the campus at the whole. So arguably, it wasn't theirs to sell, given these broader obligations.
Or to give away.
Now, what they said earlier this week was that the particular piece of land isn't mortgaged or no charges over it. But you do have to look at the campus as a whole. So if you go from the starting point that it wasn't theirs to gift ownership or to give away ownership, a structure had to be found. There have been three separate mediations. I remember last March leading the Sunday Independent business section with the prospect that this huge state investment was going to collapse in a row over not even ownership per se, but more over what was going to happen. And I think that with all the rhetoric and all of and the real visceral feelings that the Irish public have towards the prospect of any religious order having a role in healthcare, we have to kind of go and look at the reality of what we're dealing with now. In the initially, as I understand it, the St Vincent's Hospital Group wanted the National Maternity Hospital to come over to its site as a branch of the group. It's probably main negotiating big concessions was that it agreed to have this new company that would have both the National Maternity Hospital, members of its board, to protect the state interest, this golden share, and also an independent chair. It's not ideal. I would love a system whereby there was no religious control or influence over any of our healthcare. But this is the deal that has been reached, and there is a triple lock in it. People may or may not have confidence in it, but the more and more, and I've been covering this dispute for over 3 years, and the more and more I read about it and learn about it and dig around accounts, I feel that it's possibly less about Catholic ethos and more about the commercial realities. And the interesting thing in the heads of agreement, and obviously there's going to have to be done some work on the broader agreements, I think the way the solution is going to be a long lease. But if you look at the heads of agreement, there is a thing that specifically states in it that religious ethos, ethnicity, etc., that the new company that will have that protected. St Vincent's Group have not as yet opposed that inclusion, sought to alter it. And my thing, this is what I'm looking ahead to, Claire, and I'll say maybe the final word on this. Knowing what I know about the National Maternity Hospital, knowing what I know about other maternity hospitals around the state, I'm looking to 5 years' time when there is a public hospital. Imagine this compared to what we have now, where its operating theatres in the new National Maternity Hospital has a direct link to the operating theatres in St Vincent's, to the intensive care unit there. The arguments for private, the role of private consultants will arguably dilute it, because every single woman, whether she's a public or private patient, will have her own room.
Okay, and
she'll
have her own dignity. What about what John McManus says? And he's not overt here, but he sounds a warning bell. And he says, St Vincent's Health Group has been expanding into private medicine very aggressively in recent years. Is that something we should be concerned about? Are we going to hand over this money, this capital
that's
investment?
That's the point I was just trying to make, that given the fact that we are building this, the investment is coming from the state, when all of these issues, when the heads of the agreements first came out, there should have been an opportunity, in my view, for both entities to come before Billy's committee in the Committee of Health and actually set out what their understanding of those heads of agreements were. Because a lot of this dispute could have been resolved, in my view. And on the question of the board, I mean, at one level, I can understand why St Vincent's would want to be on the new board. Why? There are operational issues there. Who has right-of-way on ambulances? Where does the manpower issues exist in terms of diagnostics, in terms of infrastructure? This is a new entity on an existing medical facility.
Okay, so I'm just going to bluntly put the question,
they are
right?
The operational issues.
Here's the question. Is there opportunity here for St Vincent's Healthcare Group to make money from the National Maternity Hospital down the line?
Well, the new company, so here was the option. Had a maternity hospital gone over as a branch, even if you say its resources are ring-fenced, we know what happens when maternity resources are ring-fenced. They go to acute facilities and to all other demands. It's a new company that will have its own budget. It will have its own fiscal control. The money that's going in is the state's money. It's a state investment. So essentially, it's going to be a de facto public facility. And I think that
you'll have rooms rented out to private consultants
where does that money go?
Well, it goes to the state. If it should go to the state,
but the state won't own the hospital. St Vincent's Healthcare.
They'll get the money.
The new company will own the hospital.
Yeah,
the new company will own the hospital. And just to ask your question, Brian, because I think it's very interesting. Why aren't they coming before a public accounts committee or whatever? What we're forgetting about is that the state is investing the money. And my question is, well, where was the Department of Health and the HSE and all of this when it stepped back and left it to two voluntary hospitals to hammer out this deal? It wasn't sort of an innocent bystander that didn't have a role.
I think that's a fair question. And I think looking back on this, given the fact that both entities were there, the big entity is, of course, the state, the HSE, because of the investment of the 300 million plus that the taxpayer is putting into this. And I think that is a fundamental question that has to be asked. My understanding is the minister did not want to distract from the ongoing mediation, which Mr. Mulvey was responsible for. But I think the responsibility in the first instance should have been on both of the entities who are doing this deal to say, this is our understanding. I mean, we had this week the statement from, which I was very welcome from St Vincent's, saying that every procedure currently there in the National Maternity Hospital will continue, and any other law that is passed, which might be part of a later part of our discussions today, will fundamentally apply there. That was a very important statement that St Vincent said. And I think a lot of that, this issue could have been resolved had in October, November, we had this in the public. Okay. Rather than people feeling that the kind of drip-fed information, people understandably being suspicious about
that. I want to come to Harry McGee and Billy Keller.
There are two issues here. I think the row that has erupted between obstetricians mainly associated with the National Maternity Hospital and the project is somewhat of a paper argument. It's a wider philosophical argument about the relationship between church and state. And I think Brian was talking about the composition of the board. The board will be composed of 9 members, 4 from St Vincent's Group, 4 from the National Maternity Hospital, and then an independent chair, which is an obstetrician
international
renown. And both sides will have a veto on it. And I think the belts and braces that might have been put in by St Vincent's were done for operations operational reasons rather than for moral suasion. I think Brian, the arguments that Brian made in relation to how the campus will operate, how it will run, efficiencies, synergies, all of these have to be considered. I think John McManus's article is quite pertinent in this regard when he talked about the kind of the heavy hitters, the corporate heavy hitters that are on the St. Vincent board. They're not nuns. They're not people who are trying to bring us back to some kind of anachronistic kind of Catholic ethos. I'm just talking about the Catholic nature of the nominal chair of the board of National Maternity Hospital is the Archbishop of Dublin.
Who doesn't want the gig?
The local parish priests are members of the board.
The local parish priests. So every hospital in Ireland and elsewhere in the world had its beginnings in religious orders. That was what religious orders did in the past. Mm. And what has happened over a long period of time is that their influence has begun to wane and is beginning to wane here. And I am reassured 100% by what Ronan O'Mahony said during the week when she spoke on Morning Ireland, that the National Maternity Hospital will have complete operational independence and will be allowed to complete any procedure that is done in accordance with the law. The laws as they exist at the moment and the laws as they will happen in the future. And I think she did an interview with Catherine O'Mahony in The Independent today in which she said, it's unarguable, unassailable, it's a simple clinical imperative. It would be terrible if all this were to be stopped because of a sideshow. When the next woman dies, how will the conversation go then? And the reality is, Holles Street is unfit for purpose. There is a new extraordinary facility about to be built in St. Vincent's. I am reassured by what Ronan O'Mahony and her board has said, and 34 consultants in the National Maternity Hospital.
Including
two former masters. And I do not believe that there will be some kind of ginger group trying to influence there and trying to bring us all back into the past.
Okay, Billy Kelleher, what's your view? I mean, do you agree with what Harry just said? Because I did hear you saying during the week that we should look at compulsory purchase orders here.
No, I didn't. I was trying to explain that it would be very difficult to compulsory purchase. In my view, I don't think the Minister for Health has vested in his powers to compulsory purchase. And there will be other complexities too in view of the fact that the land is being given for nothing. The compulsory purchase, something that's being offered to the state, would be very difficult to stand over in terms of compulsory purchase.
Did you not
purchase.
Say that we should think about seizing land or attempt to seize land if redress had not been
paid? No, that was an issue about the redress scheme itself. And I think they should be kept separate. The Sisters of Charity are obligated to pay what they owe into the indemnity scheme. They owe about 3 million, and they must come forward and address that particular issue. The broader issue of the National Maternity Hospital, I mean, my major concern when I first looked at this issue was that there was no information first and foremost. The Keir Mulvey agreement was like the third secret of Fatima. It wasn't published. It should have been published immediately. If the state is to invest 300 million in a facility and there's an agreement underpinning it, the very least it should do is be published. That was eventually published after some extraction from the minister, but it hasn't given definitive legal standing to the agreement, and we need to see that before we would be certain.
It's the heads of agreement.
And I mean, the legal imperatives are critically important. Mm. Now, I personally believe that there has to be absolute independence in terms of clinical and medical oversight. Dr. Ronan O'Mahony has stated that. Many other people have stated as well. But I do believe we need to see that in terms of, cast iron legal language. The broader issue about ownership, well, I'd like to see it in public ownership. But the reality is there's only one adult teaching hospital in South Dublin that can accommodate this particular maternity hospital, and that's St. Vincent's, and the public doesn't own it. So, I mean, we have to compromise on this. And I think what we should do is try and move towards a situation where if there's going to be divesting over a period of time from religious orders and from trusts into state ownership, that there should be some mechanism put in place to ensure that will be seamless transfer into public ownership.
And we have time. We have time.
And so looking at long-term leases and the rest of it, just on the issue of private health insurance, and I mean, like, this is not a novel idea. Like, let's be honest, in Cork Maternity Hospital, there's public and private. In other hospitals across the country, there's public and private. All the maternity hospitals in Dublin are voluntary hospitals.
The three main hospitals.
The idea would be, though, that if it's a state-owned and run by the National Maternity, the money should remain in the hospital. It should be spent in the hospital.
So the whole point, though, that it won't be state-owned.
But the management, the building itself and what happens and the operational are totally different. I mean, like, a building could be owned by any entity. Mm-hmm. It's what operates it, the management company.
Yes.
Those that actually oversee it on a daily basis are the ones.
What I think is important for long term, because we know that there is a plan in terms of the rotunda and for the Coombe in terms of their co-location, yet to decide, I think, between Connolly and the Matter on one side and then St James's on the other. But the logical outcome is to have a maternity hospital co-located on the site of a tertiary hospital to get the best outcomes. All of international evidence tells us that and notes that. I was on the board of the kids' hospital, the Harcourt Street Hospital, when it moved out to Tallaght. And being frank, looking back on it, terrible mistakes were made when the Adelaide, the Mead and the Harcourt Street Children's Hospital came together. They had separate boards and then a foundation board. The mistakes that were made then should not be replicated. We need to have a system whereby people have loyalty to their new board, to their new hospital, to everything that goes with that.
So nobody rather sitting than here the has fears over ethics or ethos or any of that.
We need to be very clear. I need to be assured, and I need to see that we need to see the legal agreement. I mean, Kieran Mulvey's is a compromise. It is a document. It is not a legal document. It is an agreement. What we need to see is cast iron detail.
Okay,
I think that the minister was slow in coming to the table in terms of writing to the HSE when all this furore broke. I mean, all these things should have been thought of long in advance.
I think in fairness to Simon Harris about this, he has made it very, very clear that he's not going to stand over a situation where the independence is not there for the board. He has time, we have time, because the planning phase one of this is ultimately the autumn to resolve this issue. And I think, as he said himself this week, and he's right, cool heads are now required.
Okay, Senator Ronan Mullen is in our Athlone studio. Just put on your headphones there. Ronan, why would a Catholic order want this hospital with all of the compromises that have to come with it? And you've heard what everybody has to say around the table. You know, it won't be a place that has Catholic ethos.
Well, I've listened very carefully to what my friends there have said, and give me a bit of a run at this, Claire, because I'm coming from a very different place. I think this is a real sad mess, and I think I would prefer if this hospital wasn't being built on this particular site at this stage. But don't get me wrong, I support the right of the state to provide for different services in a pluralist society. But I also support the right of different organisations, including Christian organisations, to provide healthcare facilities according to their mission and values. And, you know, we should remember that we all know about the serious failings at times, but the record is actually fantastic, and it's heroic when one thinks of all the free stuff and all the good work that has been done. When you think of the context in which the Sisters of Charity set up this particular hospital, my heart goes out to these mainly elderly women who are really being portrayed in these days as a sinister force that know nothing about good medicine or modern medicine, and I don't believe that's true. And I believe that the state ought to be able to deal with such private entities to say, yeah, they can be part of the healthcare landscape and we're going to respect their ethos, but we're still going to provide funds because we're getting a certain value out of it for certain quality services that they provide and their support for them in the community. We're a rich enough country to provide for that diversity, and there ought to be that kind of freedom to negotiate. But sadly, what I think we've ended up in is in the worst of all worlds. The Sisters of Charity, and I think of Mother Mary Aikenhead and what she set out. I think of the late Sister Margaret Vincent Dockery, a friend of my own. Sister Mary Treadgold doing fantastic work in the present. You know, they continue to be at the cutting edge in lots and lots of ways. But I think that they dropped the ball, or may have dropped the ball. I think they may not have been very well advised, maybe by some of these lay professionals that have been involved. Because from what I'm reading, they have not managed to guarantee that there would be a Christian ethos around the provision of certain facilities into the future.
Well, very blatantly we have it that, you know, St Vincent's Hospital Group have said clearly that the National Maternity Hospital will carry out any medical procedure that is legal.
And it's the worst of both worlds, because they're being pilloried by leading medical people, by leading government people, who seem happy to take the benefit of the free site, but still want to stitch it into the public consciousness that, you know, there's something sinister about religious being involved in the provision of healthcare.
Is that what you hear when you hear Billy saying he wants absolute guarantees that the ethical issues will not be a problem, that the sisters will not be able to impose their ethos on care in the hospital? Is that what you hear?
No, I'm speaking more about the drum roll I've heard from government and, as I said, leading obstetricians. You know, when we talk about why a religious ethos should still be welcome as a part of what we do in our society. Let's think about the many people in Ireland today who don't think very much of modern clinical procedures, who worry that their older people in hospitals are seen as little second-class citizens or bed blockers because there's a loss of the sense of human dignity. Or let's think of those highly trained, professional, internationally renowned obstetricians we've been talking about in places like England, who have no problem routinely aborting children with Down syndrome, with injecting potassium chloride into the heart of a 21-week-old baby because it's not wanted. You know, we actually need a serious debate about ethics. It isn't about backward medicine trying to impose itself on society. It's about voices, including Christian voices, being entitled to provide services in this
so
state.
So what's the solution to this problem?
Please.
No, you've had a really good run of it
now. No, I just had one last sentence. And if there is public support that that should be a part of our healthcare landscape, you know, I don't actually agree with Derville when she talks about visceral feelings the Irish public has at the prospect of religious involvement in healthcare. I think the Irish public has an awful lot more nuanced view of this than many politicians.
So what's the solution? Come on. What's the solution?
Well, I don't know whether it can be rolled back at this stage, but I would like to see the state make up its mind. Does it want a maternity hospital facility in St. Vincent's? In that situation, it ought to be ready to acknowledge that no Christian organisation... for example, I'm hoping, by the way, that we don't have abortion legalised in Ireland, and I think there's a good chance we won't. But let's say it did. I don't think that any kind of Christian could be involved with such a violation of human dignity. So I would say, I would ask the question rather than offer the solution. Can we look at other options? If the state wants a national maternity hospital that's free of any kind of Christian nuance, then is it too late for them to look elsewhere? I would support their right to look elsewhere. Okay. I don't think Christians want to be in the business of providing healthcare if it's not wanted in particular settings.
All right. Brian Hayes.
I think what Ronan has said, he's entitled to say it, but the dilemma is in all of this, if this is the kind of ideological context for the debate, we're not going to get this hospital built. What I suspect, the great majority of Irish women who need this facility built and their infants and all of the healthcare professionals who work in the National Maternity Hospital want is a hospital built. We're not going to have this hospital built if ideology is going to be at the heart of it. I think the great, great majority of people in this country
want to get this. But if that's what you want, as Ronan says, go off and find a site that is not run.
We know this, Claire. That the outcomes for women in terms of a co-located maternity site on a tertiary site, as I said earlier, are much preferable in terms of world-class health outcomes. We know that. And I think the point was made already that Dr. Mahoney raised. What happens if a woman dies on the way out from the National Maternity Hospital to St. Vincent's currently? What next furore will happen then? We have to divest ourselves of the ideology here and get to the practicality of reality. Yeah, this hospital is 150 years old.
Some people are not prepared to do that, and that is the problem.
I don't think it's a very small minority of people. It's a question of human dignity.
We have a broader debate, to use a phrase from Gwyneth Paltrow, about the conscious uncoupling of the church and state. We have to remember that the accident of the history of the birth of our educational health services are the fact that in its early years, the state couldn't provide it. The religious became, because they provided vital services in the early years of the state, they're embedded in our health and education system. There is a huge debate as to how we decouple that. But in the meantime, there are services that need to be met.
Correct.
And when I speak, when I reference the visceral feelings that people had, it's in the context of a series of church scandals. And really, like, all of this information was known last year. What was it that made it light this time? And it was the chewing babies. It was the redress scream. It was just a conflation of a whole lot of things that really, really got the whole litmus thing. And I think that there is a broader debate about how do we separate church and state in terms of our public services in circumstances where the state, through capital expenditure and other means, is investing hugely in these sites. And there is, Claire, there is no other alternative for these places to go. We have three maternity hospitals.
Correct.
We have the Rotunda, the Coombe and the National Maternity Hospital, all of which under government strategy have to be co-located.
Do we have to compromise and play by the rules of the ethos of the organisation that we're asking to cooperate with
us. We've got to come to an agreement on these things in a sensible way, and that's what Mr. Mulvey has done effectively by his heads of agreement, and the position of the government is clear. We've got to work through that agreement now to make sure, to reassure people,
Claire,
about the independence of this new hospital.
If you look to the US, you know, faith-based medicine is a huge part there, as it is here. One in six hospital beds in the United States is provided in a Catholic-based institution. I believe that there are ways to deal with ethos. We can have conscientious objection for individuals and others in a healthcare setting. But it's my view that if you are pumping public funds into a facility and it is a de facto public facility for the public use and for the public interest, well then you can't have a situation where private faith is imposed on the population at large. I think there are ways and means around the difficult issues of ethos that we will have to face in both health and education, but the one thing we cannot let happen is for this critical facility for women and infants not to go ahead.
I tend to agree with that. I think there's a process happening. I think that we're looking at a gradual divestment, and I just don't think that the National Maternity Hospital should be the Alamo on which this battle is fought. We're looking at a wider philosophical issue being kind of tacked onto an operational debate an urgent medical necessity for a National Maternity
Hospital. But you get a sense of the depth of feeling on the other side of this when you listen to Ronan Mullen there.
There are many Catholics who have a different view to Ronan. There are many parish priests in Dublin who have a fundamentally different view to Ronan. There are many Catholic priests that I speak to who want to get out of
healthcare.
Not just healthcare, they want to get out of being chairman of boards of management and being responsible for all these schools.
In addition, you know, the Citizens Assembly has met and made a recommendation. That recommendation is not necessarily going to be followed either by the Oireachtas or in a referendum. I know
we're going to come back to that.
But at the same time, I think there are many Catholics who would see themselves very much as middle of the road in terms of their views on abortion and who will allow it in some circumstances, who would still consider themselves good Catholics if procedures are done in accordance with the law,
even if the law were to be changed.
Can I just say, I don't like that characterisation, well, this is Ronan speaking as a Catholic. No, I'm making it clear that what I support is the right of people of faith to be in state-funded healthcare provision, provided people want it. And what I'm saying is, if there should come a day, and I hope it won't come, when abortions are being done, that's not a Catholic issue at all. That's a question of life or death. There's tons of atheists out there who would be horrified at abortions being carried out in any hospital, religious or otherwise. So you can't just say that, you know, I think, by the way, as I said, I think the religious have dropped the ball on this and that this maybe debate is over. But what I'm saying is, you can't just expect religious communities who founded their whole facilities and gave their lives in defence of human dignity to suddenly turn their backs on certain categories of people, for example, unborn children or with disabilities or otherwise, because the state now says it's lawful to kill those. You can't call that ideology. What you're talking about is a fundamental difference about what constitutes good medicine. And there needs to be respect
We're going to come back to that debate in just a moment. I have to take a break in a moment, but Billy, just before I do, last word to you on this.
Yeah, look, I mean, the issue of the religious involved in health goes back for historical reasons, and it's seeping to present day, but I mean, they are diminishing numbers. Now, the next question that has to be asked is, who's going to run these healthcare facilities in years to come? I mean, you will have a move towards trusts, and I would be very concerned that we would keep investing in these hospitals, building up a quality healthcare facility, but it would be owned by a trust. And I think we have to look as a state in the context of divesting from the religious towards the state, rather than they be putting into trusts, which would be beyond the state into control, even though there would have been huge investment in both capital and current.
To the point I was trying to make earlier on, you know, what happens down the line to this facility? Who ultimately is in control of this? If we do this deal now, partly because of expediency, you know, what are we giving away? Yeah, have we got the foresight to see we could be landing ourselves
but
in trouble?
That is the key issue. I mean, the ownership of the building itself per se, today or tomorrow or next week when it's being constructed, is one issue. It's the longer term consequences of the investment in this by the state. Who will own it long term? Because, you know, there's 200 Sisters of Charity left. The average age, I think, is 73. You know, so over a period of time, there's going to be a diminished input from the sisters themselves. But, I mean, who will eventually be controlling that facility? the overall facility, St. Vincent's Healthcare Group, who will control that eventually, and the idea that you could hand that over to a trust where there would be lots of vested interests in it, and undermining the state's capacity to control it would be a long-term worry for me.
I have to take a break. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to the programme. Dervil MacDonald is Group Business Editor at Independent News and Media. Brian Hayes, Fine Gael MEP, Independent Senator Ronan Mullen joins us from Athlone. Fianna Fáil TD and spokesperson on health Billy Kelleher is here, along with Harry McGee, political correspondent with the Irish Times. Now, Fionnán Sheehan, writing in The Independent, says today, no one really likes to think about it, but over the next 2 years we will all have to examine our own personal views on abortion. And the Liberal votes that emerged from the Citizens' Assembly has put a new referendum very firmly on the agenda, because that's where we're headed. The government committed to holding a referendum if that's what the Citizens' Assembly decided, and now it looks as though that will happen. And Harry, that's really the inevitability here, isn't it? It's whether it will happen in the lifetime of this government.
Well, if the government lasts, it'll probably happen next spring. So if we look at the sequence of what's going to happen now, the Citizens' Assembly has not formalised its final report. That is expected during the month of June. And then a Doyle committee, a Doyle and Shannon joint committee will be formed, which will investigate this issue and look at all the recommendations.
And we know some of the membership of that already, don't we?
We do, yeah. Billy Kelleher, I think, will be leading the standard on behalf of Fianna Fáil.
I'll be honest.
There was 16 from the Doyle and then 4 from the Shannon originally, but the Shannon insisted that each of the groups within the Shannon be represented. So it looks now like it could be composed of 23 individuals. No chair has been selected. They haven't even started the process yet, but Jerry Buttermer, his name has been mentioned. Of course, he was in charge of the Health Committee that looked at the A, B and C cases several years ago. So the committee is expected to come back to the Oireachtas in November, at which stage the government will have to come up with proposals, and then the Oireachtas will have to pass them early in the new year. And the hope is, if everything goes according to plan, that there will be a referendum that will be put to the public in March. It sounds seamless and easy, but within it's so complicated, so nuanced, and there are so many legal obstacles. And of course the in the ointment, of course, is the very liberal recommendations that was made by the committee. I think they looked at 15 questions and they agreed that abortion be allowed in limited circumstances in each. Mm-hmm. But I think Ronan Mullen adverted to it earlier on. Some of the recommendations made will create great difficulties for politicians, many of whom believe that perhaps it was a step too far.
It's complicated, it's nuanced, but it's no excuse not to deal with it. In 1992, during the X case, the late Supreme Court Judge Niall McCarthy said then, in 1992, speaking of the Eighth Amendment, which had obviously taken place in 1983, that the failure to legislate was inexcusable. That was then. We're now in 2017, and this issue has to be dealt with, and it has to be dealt with in the real Citizens' Assembly, which are the houses of the Oireachtas. I was surprised by some of the recommendations actually in it, but what they did was, they at least they got expert advice. Unusually, look, there'll be a lot of debate over, well, did they hear from the appropriate people? They didn't, for example, hear from women most affected by termination for medical reasons. But by the by, they heard from a lot of experts. They deserve a huge amount of support from the public for wading through the options, and they were asked a series of questions. And what I found was interesting about a previous Citizens' Assembly process was the Citizens' Assembly recommendation to extend the vote of the franchise to citizens overseas. And what happened after that was that the government, because obviously one of the biggest landmark things this year was Enda Kenny saying, we're going to extend the vote. But what did the government do on foot of their deliberations? They pulled together an options paper with 7 options to put to the people as to, well, how would we do that? And I think it is imperative now.
And they will be the referendum questions asked in that instance. Yeah. And you're saying, let's use that model.
So here's what
we
could do. We could repeal or amend the Eighth Amendment to say that, you know, you could give special protection to underborn, but that it would be legal in circumstances prescribed by law. And if you look around Europe, there are very, very different regimes, some quite liberal, some quite restrictive. But what unites them all is that they're dealt with in statute. And I think a potential way forward is to present a series of options based on the recommendations.
And from restrictive,
from very
right
restrictive
through to liberal.
Run on, and what have do you, a proper debate on those.
What do you think of that suggestion? Let the people decide based on all of those options, as Dervil says, from restrictive through to liberal.
Well, look, let's first of all divorce it from the earlier debate, because this will have nothing to do with religion. This is for people of all shades of opinion about who lives, who dies. That's what's at stake in this discussion. It's the most serious of human dignity issues. It's like a debate about whether we should have a referendum to reintroduce capital punishment, except we're talking about the most innocent of human beings here and their mums, who both need to be protected, in my view. Now, I do need to get clarification on something. Did the government really commit to hold a referendum if the Citizens Assembly so advised? I don't recall that. I'm open to correction, but I don't see how the government could, given that, and I've always been a critic of this particular Citizens Assembly process. I felt it could involve groupthink. I think its radical proposals are not surprising. I think it is now a matter for the Oireachtas Committee that's established. I hope to
be on. Are you going to be on that? Okay,
you're. I gather that I am, because I think I'm going to be the nominee of the independent senators. I certainly expressed an interest, and I've been advised that it's probably going to be me. But the point is this: it's now for us to consider everything from the bottom up again. I hope that we will have a debate, a discussion of the issues that looks at issues that the Citizens Assembly never even got near. I mean, we had the bizarre situation last Sunday of last minute proposals which were never ever discussed by the Assembly or considered, but which would affect thousands of lives. For example, abortion on kind of economic grounds up to 22 weeks. It's remarkable that good people setting out to deliberate on this most serious issues would in such an unconsidered manner just throw in issues like this.
And are you saying, Ronan, that you do not accept the inevitability that we're going to have a referendum in the near future on this issue?
I don't. I think the people elected to represent the Irish public now need to look at this issue.
Because Billy Kelleher here said during the week, didn't you, that the status quo cannot prevail?
Well, what I said very clearly was that on foot of the Citizens Assembly's recommendations, that there's no doubt that there is going to be a debate on this in the Dáil at some stage. There will inevitably, in my view, be some form of consultation within the Oireachtas, and then I would imagine something will be put to the people. Now, the difficulty, of course, is that this has been described as a roadmap, the Citizens Assembly's recommendations. It is a roadmap with many roads on it and not a very clear route, being quite truthful. I'm just making the point that there seems to be a perception out there that this is very clear and concise. There's been two substantive recommendations in the context of Article 43.3 itself, and then if they are changed, or if it's changed, 13 reasons where the Oireachtas could legislate. Now, they are very varied, those 13 reasons when termination could be permitted. Very varied. I'm just making the point, Ervil, it is not possible, in my view, and I'm no constitutional lawyer or expert, but having sat through the protection of life during pregnancy debate and being involved in this debate for the last 6 years, that you could put those 13 issues to the people. I just don't think that is possible.
What you could put to the people is a repeal of it or an amendment of it to allow the Oireachtas to legislate in this area.
But the Citizens' Assembly said that it should not repeal Article 43.3. It was quite clear it wanted to amend or change or to include another article which would allow the Oireachtas to legislate for. But it did, and it was quite clear, Justice Lefoy was quite clear in her contribution, saying that repealing Article 43.3, in her view, would not be possible, that it would be more likely to include other articles.
Brian Hayes, yeah.
Well, obviously, we have this recommendation and the work of the Citizens' Assembly, and they should be congratulated for the work they've done. I'm personally not a great fan of it, I have to say. I think it's a small group of people. I was very impressed by what Alison O'Connor said this week in terms of their sincerity and the work they put in,
their commitment
over a 5 or 6 week period. I think I have to mark that out.
I know, but
that's not necessarily mean that I'm fundamentally in favour. So we have this recommendation from them. The idea that this is the only show in town and their recommendations, we have to come to a view on their recommendations. Yes, we have a view in it, but it's still a matter for the Oireachtas, which is the real Citizens Assembly, to make their views known. So we'll have this committee. That committee will do its work. My personal view is I think the status quo will have to be looked at again. I think there is a need for change. And the question is, do you amend Article 43.3 or do you repeal it? And the question is, can we come up with a series of words to reflect what a lot of our younger Irish women now want? And that's the question. And if we can't do that, we should look at the option of repeal.
However, several people have put up proposed amendments.
Can I just make my point? I actually think the right way to approach this is, in whatever referenda context we put, is that you have to have side by side what you're going to replace it with. It is not, I don't think it's viable, quite frankly, that the public will accept a constitutional change without knowing what we're going to replace it with. And the real issue is going to be around what is going to be in the legislation, in my view. And that's a very difficult task for colleagues. Can I make one point? I'm a middle-aged male politician, as useless to the proceedings of childbirths as any other
male. There are loads of you around the place.
As my mother constantly reminds me.
Useless or male?
utterly useless to the procedure that, that occurs. But we've... I'm nearly 50 years of age in a few years' time, and we, all our views have changed this issue. I don't define myself as being pro-life or pro-choice. I think the great majority of Irish people are somewhere in between. Because why? They've seen experience by their wives, their partners who have gone through this, and they've changed their views on it.
Which is why they don't deserve binary
and
politics.
That's exactly the point I'm making. We need to listen to women in this debate. The person that I most listen to is my wife on this issue, and she got it right this week when she said to me, the key relationship is between me and my doctor and my midwives. And yes, of course, you're party to all of this as well as a man, but there needs to be an understanding that male politicians find themselves deeply inadequate on this issue, because directly the effect is on women. And I think there is a demand amongst women that we deal with this issue. I fundamentally agree with what Derbla said in terms of the abdication of the Oireachtas to deal with this question the last 30 years. I met Gareth Fitzgerald 6 weeks before he passed away at a four-hour conversation with him. I said very candidly to him, what was your one big regret? And he said to me, going down the road of the Eighth Amendment, I allowed myself to be part and parcel of party politics. We have made a terrible mistake in putting stuff into the Constitution that should not be in the Constitution, in my humble opinion.
Can I come
and
in
I
on
think
that?
We've got to
yeah,
undo
Ronan
that
Ronan
now.
Wants to respond to that. Yes, Ronan.
The Eighth Amendment was designed to take decisions about abortion away from political elites and judicial elites, and it actually largely succeeded, because in 2017, unborn children are still protected in Irish law. And I'd like to bring in the voice of another woman. Many, many women are in favour of protecting unborn children because they love both the mum and the baby. There's a young woman called Mary Kenny, a 20-something in Limerick. Her daughter Holly is alive. And what Mary says is this: the time it took me to arrange my abortion in England was the time I needed it to change my mind. The Eighth Amendment has saved, at a conservative estimate, at least 100,000 lives. And that's easily seen if you compare the rate of Irish women of Irish pregnancies that end in Britain, about 1 in 20, four times that rate in Britain.
Can you just address Brian Hayes' point, though, that the most important,
is what I'm trying to say,
the most important relationship is between the woman, the doctor and the midwives?
Yes, that is the most important relationship. And the law is always about just ensuring that human beings are protected equally. You know, we had a big referendum where the word equality was front and centre in 2015. And whatever view people took on it, it was about recognising at some level that human beings are fundamentally equal. And that point was made repeatedly. Now, when you look at the equality issues that arise with the abortion issue, the equality lies on the side of protecting human beings from their earliest, most vulnerable stage. That's the pro-equality position. But it's never about just saying no abortion. It's about recognising that many, many women have been let down who chose abortion because they weren't supported. And they need healing and they need support. It's about recognising, however, that Ireland, for all its faults, has had a life-saving effect by the law that it chose. There may be other things that we've gotten wrong, but thousands of people, I know friends, for example, whose abortion appointment was made twice and they didn't go through with it. That somewhere in there, the law had helped them not do something that they're very glad they didn't do now.
Derbal, go ahead.
I just want to actually personally thank Brian for his contribution and just for highlighting the fact that this is about women. It's primarily about women and the relationship that they have with their clinicians, with their partners, with their family. I think what's changing in our society is that there is a more appreciation for the complex situations women find themselves in. The notion that women who do decide to terminate their pregnancies haven't put a lot of thought, consideration and difficult consideration into that is quite frankly insulting. But what we know both in Ireland and elsewhere is that a ban does not prevent abortions happening. We know that because at least 12 women travel away every day. I think what's changed in the last couple of years is that there is, thankfully, a better understanding of women and girls, the situations they find themselves in. There are women who terminate their pregnancies for medical reasons. There are women, you may not like it, but there are women who for socioeconomic reasons feel that they can't proceed with it. But there is such a range of personal experiences, and the shunt that we put into the Constitution, well-intended and well-meaning in 1983, has not served anyone well. What we need to do is, we're one of the few countries in the world that has this embedded in our Constitution. What we need to do is look at the options, consider them carefully and compassionately, come up with our own solution and have it in statute where it belongs. Harry?
I think putting it in statute is just going to create difficulties, and just from a pragmatic political point of view, that I don't think that's just...
That's how it's dealt with everywhere, all over Europe and the world.
Perhaps it is, but I think...
What's the alternative? Guidelines?
The Irish context, I think, will require a change in constitution and a very prescriptive list of circumstances in which termination or abortion will be allowed. And I think that if you were to insert...
It's going to be a very long constitution.
It might be, but I think that you have to look at the political circumstances, and you have to look at the composition of the Dáil. For example, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil will both allow free votes. And if you look at the vote on the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill, I think Fianna Fáil allowed a free vote, and I think only four or five...
Six out of 19.
voted in favour. And I think that you might have comparable numbers in a free vote for Fianna Fáil. I'm not sure what the situation might be in Fine Gael. So yeah. I'm just saying that in terms of getting it through the Dáil and getting a referendum through, I think that...
That's why I'm saying, Harry, you would need to have the legislation with some sunset clause in advance of putting the constitutional referendum. There would have to be agreement in the House first as to what are the grounds for...
But Harry, in what other area is because the Constitution is a document that expresses at a level of principle. What you then need to do is convert that principle into practical terms, whether it's property, whether it's education. You support it by statute. And why is it that no other area of healthcare or any other area of conscience... We had to do that with the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act was a statutory expression.
I'm not expressing a view on the substantive issue. I'm expressing a view on what is possible.
Can I have
in a political context? I'm talking about the process, Derval. I'm not talking about the substantive issue.
Harry's point is well made in relation to... We are in a new situation now. Why? Because the two biggest parties in the Dáil are now going to offer a free vote, which should have happened on the last occasion. I said publicly we made a terrible mistake at the time, losing people like Lucinda Creighton and others who have different views on this. I find it ludicrous, the idea, when I'm asked what's Fine Gael's view on this or Fianna Fáil's view on this, there's no such thing. The idea that a political party should have a corporate view on this issue when it is so fundamental to your own conscience and personal choice is daft in my view. So we are in a totally new regime now, Harry, because of this, because of the free vote, how that will work out. But my personal view is this. I don't think you are going to get a constitutional referendum through until at the same time you have clearly put
the
through the Dáil what you are going to replace it with. And actually, it may not be as liberal as people think.
Can I come in with one question?
Okay, very briefly, Ronan, because reference. The clock is against me.
The
go
great
ahead.
And the good in Denmark plan to be Down syndrome free by 2030. Are we really saying that we want to change our constitution so as to say that some babies will allow them to be aborted, but that other babies shall not?
No, we're
is
not.
That
no,
society,
no, we're
is
no,
that
we're
the society
no.
that we insulting. Want to create? No, I'm not trying to insult anybody. I'm trying to confront people with the reality of what changing our constitution means. We wouldn't be having
but
this
we
discussion.
We already have that reality, Ronan, and the X case. We were told at the time in the early 1980s
Brian, please let me finish.
Sorry,
I didn't interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I'm very conscious that we mustn't interrupt each other and try and let the issues play themselves out in full because there's so much at stake. We wouldn't be having a conversation here about changing our constitutional ban on the death penalty, for example. We'd have the Council of Europe and any number of international institutions coming down on us like a ton of bricks. Why is it then that we want to change our constitution so as to take away the protection of the law from certain categories of innocent children? And shouldn't we learn from the Citizens' Assembly? Because we saw how quick that group, once they were asked the question, come back to us and let us know in what circumstances we can deprive some children of the protection of the law. Isn't it very interesting that they came back with a very radical free-for-all, including abortion for disability, including abortion up to 22 weeks, practically on the threshold of viability,
okay, Ronan,
just for money reasons.
Okay, Ronan.
That's what we're facing
all right,
into.
We have to leave that one there. I want to have a quick word about Europe and what's happening there today, this lunchtime, after this break. Now, our Europe correspondent Tony Connolly says an EU spokesman says the declaration on potential Irish unity referendum was submitted by the Irish government and will be formally adopted. So this is going to be known as the Kenny text. A great coup, Billy Kelleher, for Enda Kenny in Europe.
Well, look, I think it's an endorsement of the fact that the Good Friday Agreement clearly is an international agreement. It was recognised, you know, it's been lodged before the United Nations. The European Union has been a great supporter of the peace process, the Good Friday Agreement.
He had to fight to get that in there.
Well, I would be disappointed if he didn't.
And he did. And I think the Taoiseach deserves...
And then how Fine Gael want to
great
move
credit, not just on this issue, but the bigger issue, quite frankly, about the special circumstances of Ireland in terms of the Brexit negotiation. He's stuck at this now for the last number of months, allied to the diplomatic effort of all our teams across Brussels. And I think he's done a great job and he deserves credit for the work he's done in the last number of months.
But still, Brian, you do need...
It's the strongest assertion of Irish nationalist aspirations since the New Ireland Forum in the 1980s.
Internationally recognised.
But that doesn't absolve him from the other issues of ensuring protection for tourism, trade, agriculture, all these issues. You know,
it's
a big
picture. It's the most important issue. All right, we will come back to that. Thank you all very much for being here. Also to Ronan Mullen, who joined us from Athlone. Callan's Kicks is next. We're back next week. Talk to you then.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was Bronwyn Cullen. The researcher, John Riley, and sound supervision was by Kira Murphy. Coming up after the break, it's Callan's Kicks.
This April in Home Store and More.